The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
It's a good one, and I hope you can sustain it. We'll try and help you out here. But I thought it would be good to talk about stage one, entering the path of enlightenment. The path of enlightenment, which is bringing things out of ignorance. That's all it is whatever's in darkness in our mind that we don't understand, that's not clear, that we begin to enlighten, begin to see clearly. So it's a path of discovery of our true nature. And the 10 ox herding pictures, this is the first one, describe this Zen training path of awakening, of enlightening. To enlightenment. So I thought this would be a good fresh start to the new year. Brush painting has been an expedient means of the Zen tradition for centuries, where sometimes teachers would present an image to a student to try and break them through to the nature, their true nature. So D.T. Suzuki had a quote, "The arts of Zen are not intended for utilitarian purposes or purely aesthetic enjoyment, but are meant to train the mind, indeed, to bring it in contact with ultimate reality." So to train the mind, bring it in contact with ultimate reality. So we have a lot of news in this year, coming into this year, some things very difficult in this world. We know this at every turn. Devastating events. You know, Dogen always said impermanence is right in front of our eyes. And some of the ways that it comes is quite brutal. But also to remember, there's good news. There is good news. One being that you're here. You showed up and followed your vow and came this morning. That's really good news. Encountering the Dharma. Encountering a path of true liberation from suffering, from stress. So we're in a place where Dharma is practiced. There's teachers, there's teachings. There's training, all available. We have favorable circumstances. All of us can be here without being secretive or hidden. Nothing's going to happen. So we have companions. We can practice the Dharma openly. And each of us will respond differently to this encounter. As it should be, because we each have to put it together. So you're encountering this over 2,500-year-old teaching from someone who realized their true nature that's come to us through generations, through many bodies, many minds, many hearts, with the same sufferings, same situations that were dire, famine, disease, pandemics, wars, burnings of monasteries, and continue to practice the Dharma that we have here in New York in 2025. So we'll each experience it differently, and we have everything that we need at our disposal to do this journey. So that's good news. So that's like three things already, maybe four. A lot of good news around. And our the prerequisite is our willingness to follow the path. There's nothing to acquire, actually. That's the hard part. You know, Buddha, upon his enlightenment, said, we are perfect and complete, and we lack absolutely nothing. So it may not feel that way, but that's what we bring home, is that completeness that has always been here. So therefore, during this journey, we take up and engage practices and training to personally experience and verify the reality of that perfection. Yeah. Not just once, but over and over and over. And we have to also kind of bust through our ideas of perfection and what we think that even means. What is perfect and complete, lacking nothing? Does that mean we have to be all cleaned up and not messy and something to look into? So I thought I would do a series of talks on the stages of awakening, at least today. That's what I thought. Never know with myself. I could shift on a dime. But I wanted to start with stage one because I knew everyone's making vows. And we're going to be filled today, as it should be. And I hope this is like all the time, that we just keep doing this. But you'll see. So just a little bit about the ox herding pictures. They're considered folk images. There's different collections. There's some that are 6, 10, 12. We have a collection of 10 that we use, and they're accompanied by poems and commentaries, which I'm going to share with you today, the one for this searching for the ox. And they depict a young ox herder. That's us, beginning a search. We're this young ox herder. Maybe I didn't make enough weeds, but we're in the weeds, so to speak. And it's a quest to tame, train, and transform our heart and mind, a process represented by subduing the ox. So centuries ago, it was recognized that it was important to have a visual component to this. So these ox herding pictures are centuries years old, these different collections. And they were painted as a teaching. And the short pieces of poetry were teachings that we could hear and memorize and remember. And upstairs, if you go upstairs afterwards when we have refreshments, you'll see a series on the wall you can look at more carefully. There are reproductions of ink paintings done by Jikihara Sensei, who was born in 1904. He died in 2005. And he used to visit Zen Mountain Monastery upstate in the Catskills. And in 1982, he came and painted this series of ox herding pictures and presented them as a gift to the monastery. So the originals are in the dining hall there. If you want to see them, you have to go to the monastery. And they're a beautiful example of a Chinese style of painting called Nanga or Zenga in Japanese. And then he came back another year. It happened to be the year I entered the monastery in 1990. So I got to meet Jikihara Sensei and watch him paint. And he did a few of the stages. He didn't do every stage. And he wore a suit, which I thought was amazing. You know, I think somebody's going to get into paint, they would like wear rough clothes, but he had a little suit on and a tie. And it just blew my mind, his concentration and how they just like came out of him, like one after the other. He would just like unwrap a candy and put it over another one. And obviously, this was from years of practicing rocks, flowers, weeds, trees, you know, over and over, so that you can find spontaneity. So you can become an expert and then forget that and put it all together and come up with an image. I never formally learned how to paint ox herding pictures, as you can probably see, but I've never done it in front of a group like that in particular. But every action of his counted, and I'm just watching his body and every stroke that he did. And so about 10 years ago, I went back to them and started to paint them myself and do them with found materials and all kinds of, and ink paint and other paints. And I would copy Jikahara's images to try and learn how to do the expression. And then it became kind of ridiculous, like something would just spill and I would start doing ox herding pictures. Like every like soy sauce on my napkin got horns and turned into an ox. And so it just became like everywhere, every drip was like started a series of paintings. So we began to do it with more juice from plants and found materials. And so today I will be reading for you the verse and poem, which was composed by Kakuan Shien from the 12th century that accompanies Jikihara's paintings. So there's a lot of translations too of the poems, so you can look at them and some may speak to you more clearly. And then I may continue through the winter season, which would give me 9 more talks. So on the translation, Victor Sogen Hori, who also visited the monastery, he wrote this, which I thought was helpful to kind of set this in place. He writes about them. Here, our essential nature is compared to an ox. We seek the ox, grasp it, tame it, and finally the self, which has always been seeking, becomes completely one with the ox. But this also is forgotten, so that we now simply carry on our ordinary lives. This is the process described by the pictures. They show concretely the progression of our practice and are helpful for a self-examination of our own practice and encouragement for further practice. To stress, he says, that these pictures and verses are merely an indication of the way to practice and not an object for conceptual thought. To study the 10 ox herding pictures are very useful for those actually striving to make clear the true self through the actual sitting and aching legs. So it's not like you read it and then you understand. It's got to be through awakening down and through our body. For those who want to learn the rationale of Zen, I must warn you that these pictures and words will only be white elephants of no use whatsoever. So Daido would say it as my teacher would say, don't confuse the map with the terrain. So the path, the way, is not simply one direction, doesn't have a starting point. So they are lined up, but it's not a starting point to a goal. That practice is circular or spiral, okay? It goes on, it doesn't have a beginning or an ending. So you have a circle. Where did that start and where did it end? It's a circle. So that's our practice. It's circular. So we can go back and forth to different stages, but with more understanding. So I can still go back to this, searching in the weeds, but it's different at this point after many years of practice, that stage. So they work like that. Again, to caution our thinking mind that this practice ever goes in a straight line. We are not straight line people. We don't develop like that. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. We would have gotten a manual at birth. This is what you have to do. Wouldn't that be nice? Not. So you may look at each stage upstairs and read the poem, and there's a recognition. You may say, oh, I'm at stage 8. And that's okay, because there is a recognition that we'll find with each stage. And you say, that's me. That's it. I'm there. And then you look at the one before it. You go, no, I'm here. So where are we? And then we can just go deeper, reading it and studying it in a non-linear way, but through our practice on the cushion. We had a father come with his son from Japan, and he wanted his son to enter residency at the monastery. And we were talking by the ox herding pictures in the monastery, and he looked at them, and he pointed to the wall, and he said, my son, he's here. He hasn't even hit the path yet. He's on the wall. And we were like, oh, poor kid, you know. That's what his dad said in front of him. Yeah. So, the story of taming the ox. How come it's an ox? Why are we searching for the ox? Why isn't it a wild raccoon or a wild pig or a horse? Well, the story begins in India, which is a Hindu country, where oxen were and still are considered very precious and are very carefully taken care of. If you've ever been there, you'll see that. Considered to be messengers of God. So that's how you're treating your ox. It's a messenger of God. That's how they get to sleep in your house. And everywhere, cows and oxen in India walk very freely. And I used to wonder, like, how do they get back to their owner? They all seem to know where to go at night. They all go back to their home. But otherwise, you see them just walking freely, mingling with humans. They're considered equal to humans. So to raise an ox meant to work on your divine self. Also a metaphor for the training in doing that. And in China, the idea and the thing were not seen as separate. The ox represented the mind itself directly. Search for the ox. Not an idea about the mind, but the mind as it is, non-dual. So we're on this planet. I think we're about 8.25 billion people on this planet Earth. And to live our vows, to do something to save each other, to want to help living beings, these 8 billion people. We chant, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them. That is impossible, is it, though? Zen teachings offer us a different way to look at this. I think, and Sogen Hori writes, if we raise not one thought of a small self, that resolves it right there and resolves it for everyone. We do not do it as saving of another person. Rather, we are manifested as being completely that bird's call, that sun shining, and that moon's light. We are the 10,000 things to be as such. So he's saying, in a sense, we become the true awareness that we are. We're awareness. Fresh, alive awareness. And we become the ox. We become the moon. We become the flower in every situation. And just radiate that brightly without any disconnection between things. Without any dualism. able to be born as all things and return to all things. And so that's possible if we begin to keep in mind this wisdom of the emptiness as the basis for everything, that there's nothing fixed. The self is not a fixed entity. It's moving, it's changing. It's not everything in this skin is me and everything outside is something else. It's all together, one process moving on. There's nowhere to stand. There's no, Dido used to say, there's nowhere to put this gigantic body. Nothing outside of it. But we make walls in our mind. We make separations. There's differences, but fundamentally, you and I and all things are the same thing in that absolute way. But I'm not you and you're not me and I'm not a cup. And because its basis, it has no fixedness, it can manifest as anything whatsoever in perfect accord with circumstances, with the forces present, coming in to being and disappearing. The true source of all beings is here. It's kind of, if maybe that rings a bell to some of you, what Buddha said upon his enlightenment. He said, he saw the morning star and he said, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it marvelous? All beings, all living beings, and I and this great earth have at once attained the way. He's saying it right there. So that's what we can do for people. That's what we can do for this world, is close that gap. And it takes care of a lot. We still respond. We still see what's going on. So it won't happen with a snap, crackle, and a pop. That's for sure. I mean, forever long we've been alive, we've been building, conditioning our minds and filling it up with clutter. So much clutter. It'll take time to become clear again. And this is why we need a text like this, which divides the process of going through the practice into 10 simple stages. Allows us to talk about the journey, gives us perspective how it works. As Dido would say, we need markers, and he says, to balance the map with mystery. So even though we're laying out stages, there's still this mystery present of who we truly are, not knowing, no reference point. And if this map isn't helpful, he says, don't use it. If the ox herding pictures get you too hung up on stages, don't use this map. And the amazing thing is that we're in the human realm. There's all these realms we go through, animal, hungry ghost, hell, godlike, jealous realms. But it's only in the human realm where we can review our behavior. Isn't that amazing? We have this ability to be self-reflective, self-realize, only in the human realm, so it's said. More good news. There's a possibility of reviewing what we do with our actions and the knowledge that we can search and step on a path and it can be walked. So that's the first of the ox herding pictures. So now I'll get to the poems. So there's a preface, searching for the ox. Until now, just one sec. Until now, the ox has never gone astray. Why then do we need to search for it? Because they've turned away from themselves. They became estranged from it, then lost in the dust. At last, they led it astray. They're lost as soon as the path divides. Winning and losing consume them like flames. Right and wrong rise around them like blades. The verse. Vigorously cutting a path through the brambles, you search for the ox. Wide rivers, eternal mountains, the path seems endless. With strength depleted and mind exhausted, you cannot find it. There is only the gentle rustle of maple leaves and the cicada's evening song. Until now, the ox has never gone astray. Why then do we need to search for it? Why have you come here today? Why are we gathered together doing zazen? We're all looking for this deep mind. We're seeking and digging and searching. Yet, is there any one of us that has ever lost it? Strayed in any way? We all have so many thoughts and confusions and many concerns, but where have these come from? And how are they different from this original essence? The ox herder walks with a rope, a leash. For the ox, but it's nowhere to be found. They're looking a little lost, searching for something, not even sure what. The stage when we have not started on the spiritual path yet. We're just somewhere. Something's happening inside. There's stirrings. We feel uncomfortable, unsatisfied in our life. So there's faint stirrings within us. We may be aware of some questions, which come in different ways, just a general discomfort. Or we're noticing we're suffering and just say, where can I be free of suffering? Who am I? Why does it hurt so much to be me? Why is there so much harm and evil? What's happening? Those are the questions that start. Like, what? What? What's going on? What is this? What is all of this? Maybe we're motivated by a fear of death. Or a fear to live. Maybe we're thinking of the if onlys. If only we had enough material things, I'd be happy. Enough money to buy what we need of any of our fancies. And we get some of it and we have it, yet there's still this ache. Nothing seems to completely satisfy us, and we're wondering about this lasting happiness. Perhaps if we have a good relationship with someone, that's the ticket, as John Lovitz used to say. It'll click in. We'll have the right person. But it's very hard to find the right person or to be the right person. All loving, all accepting. Even finding someone, we find that person cannot satisfy all our needs, all our wishes, all our hopes. Shucks. Wasn't that what fairy tales were made of and showed us? Or we have a worthwhile, high-paid job that might give us things that are good, security. But again, it only covers a certain period of our life or some part of our life. They're all good. It's important to do. And yet, our deeper happiness seems so fleeting. There's happy, sad, those are just like weather conditions. But I'm talking about outside of conditions, that kind of happiness. It's not based on conditions. Something is missing, or we miss it in how we see. We're like the ox herder in this picture. There's this refreshing stream, beautiful trees, colorful leaves, snow, wonderful bird song. Not satisfied. They're us, anxiously looking for something, some inner peace, some inner contentment, some clarity. And this feeling of wondering is raising the Bodhi mind. Whatever brought you here, that wonder, whatever the impulse was, that is raising your Bodhi mind. We don't know, but we show up on a Sunday. Or we finally see, we like, I want to retreat. I want to learn more. So we're taking a step into something larger. What? What is it? So the preface begins with a question. Why then do we need to search for it? If it's already been here, why do we need to search for it at all? Because we turned away from ourselves. We became estranged from it, lost in the dust. At last we led it astray. And as soon as we think about doing something to clarify our mind, sometimes more thoughts and heaviness comes in. We live and see everything around us in the world of two, this and that. But our eye's true source sees one, sees that unity. We know it prior to this world of division. We know this. When we see dualistically, what happens? We get insecure, unbalanced. Something is happening somewhere to us, outside of us. The hills of home recede farther and farther away. We get lost as soon as the path divides. In the Faith Mind Sutra, it says, a hair's breadth distinction and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. How do we see distinctions and their unity as one view? Winning and losing consume us like flames, right and wrong, rise around like blades. As soon as one thought comes forth, we're in a world of dualism. We have one wispy thought, and then another one associates with it, and then another one, and then another one. And we begin to uncover what it is to practice when we let go and return. And then we can see the dualism from a larger place, beyond win and lose, beyond right and wrong. More good news. Gosh, so much good news. It said, if beyond dualism, there is an equality of true human quality. This true quality is the source of actual equality. If we can embrace that, we can see that equality clearly. Then humans can respect and love each other deeply. That's the infinite capacity of our mind. So in the verse, it says, vigorously cutting a path through the brambles. So we've given rise to this Bodhi mind, and we took a step to learn Zazen, all of us at some point. And then the more we sit, the more thoughts we seem to have. Ever notice? We thought we were coming to sit in the middle of bliss, in an ocean of bliss, and we're like in the center of a storm. Where is the original mind we were going to look for and realize anyway? Maybe we better go home quickly and accept that we're meant to live in a world full of desires. That's probably better for us anyway. If we are thinking about it in that way, we might turn away. Wide rivers, eternal mountains, the path seems endless. We sit, we really want to do this. We think about doing that. We plan for doing something else. Our legs hurt, our backs hurt. We get angry at all those thoughts. We get angry because our legs hurt. We get angry because. And the harder we work, it seems like the worse it gets. So it seems. This is what we hadn't noticed. But finally we sit down and get quiet and we see what we're in. And then we hear teachings about something so splendid. You're perfect and complete, lacking nothing. You have Buddha mind from the beginning, which doesn't seem to make sense. It's as if we're trying to scratch a itch from our foot from the outside of our shoe. What is all the good of all that any of this? We scream inside, sitting here perfectly still with our folded up. We can't even look at our phone. We can't even hold a drink. What's the point? That comes with strength exhausted, depleted, mind exhausted, spirit wearied. We cannot find it. There's no place that allows us to turn around. No place gives us refuge. It has just started, and we already don't like being here. I felt that in the beginning. It's like I was like, should I stay or should I go? Who has not sung this song? I think I'm not meant for this place. It doesn't suit me. I think I'd better leave. I've left so much work undone, and I really should be getting to it. Maybe I didn't do the right thing coming here, and I should leave right now. Don't do this. My life is so busy. Why did I leave and come here? I can't figure out any of this. I need to eat. I need some pizza right now. I might as well go home. We think this. Everyone has thought this. So we listen. There's only the gentle rustle of maple leaves and the cicadas' evening song in the trees. Trungpa Rinpoche says about this stage, the inspiration for this first step, which is searching for the ox, is feeling that things are not wholesome, something is lacking. That feeling of loss produces pain. You are looking for whatever it is that will make the situation right. You discover that ego's attempt to create an ideal environment is unsatisfactory. You don't know, but something in us is willing to put ourselves through the rigors of practice and training. There is something that feels right. So, do not give up now that you've been able to get started and have finally turned to the Dharma today. This will take some time. And I remember my first time sitting down, I was like, oh, I definitely have a body and I definitely have a mind. I remember telling Daito Roshi, I felt like I was playing a pinball machine. I'm just going point, 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 just thoughts. And I never really saw it so clearly. I remember one session when I stayed for a longer retreat, I actually went out at Kinhin and I walked to the front gate, which we put a chain and we close it, and I stood there looking on the other side. And he always used to take a break from Kinhin. He was a smoker and he'd smoke out this window. He'd open his window and smoke. And I hear him yell to me, "You can go, but you can never leave." And I was like, no privacy here at all. I marched back to the Zendo. But I did sit with that Clash song through the whole morning, you know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go? I really want to know. Deciding to stay, deciding to go. This period's okay. This one wasn't. I was just like, I don't know. And yet I was doing it. I was beginning the search. That's what we encounter, our mind like that. So we keep going. Why? Why? So make that personal. Make that personal. Why is it that you sit here and come to something like this? Because when you can get close like that, you'll continue. Or you'll find a way, your way, to continue. It may not be this. That's fine. That's what we're here to find. But you have to give it a little time, because you're going to be uncomfortable the first pass. Most of us will be. It's like, what? Count to 10? What is all this? To study the Buddha ways, to study the self, is to forget the self. To forget the self is to then be enlivened by those 10,000 things coming forward as you, as us. And that continues endlessly. So stay tuned for stage 2, which is discovering some footprints of the ox. No one is a super person about this. Everyone has confused thoughts. Everyone has pain. Everyone wants to leave at the beginning, sometimes in the middle, and sometimes far along after many years. Everyone has this identical experience. You can talk to them. The ones in robes, ask them. And when something is finally actually experienced directly, just from your first period of Zazen, you'll have a direct experience with yourself. Even if you're not sure what it is, you will know if you are to keep going. To keep going even a little bit at a time for what has to be done. So this can't be all resolved at once in one sitting that you came, right? We have to keep going. And once you've started, just to keep that effort going, and you have companions, because it's not easy to put ourselves down. We're like this silence and stillness. It's a pretty rare thing that some of us really know the importance of, and that we can only find certain things in that state of stillness and silence. It only occurs there. So we preserve it. More good news. We have companions. Even though from the beginning everyone is here, there's nothing to acquire. Something that I heard in my beginning instruction was that no one is going to give you anything. And I was relieved at that. I felt my body, like when they said, no one's going to give you anything. And I was kind of relieved. And then another part came in a little later, said like, I want somebody to give me something. I really want that. So again, it was a mixture. Dad used to say, you sit down in this position, you're not going to get struck by lightning. It's not like, do me, I'm here. You know, okay, do me. We do it. We do it. We see it. Little by little, it's uncovered, it's revealed, our true self. We each have this wondrous opportunity to engage this wondrous life and take up the Dharma. And engage practices to personally experience and verify the reality of that perfection. That's That's the most important. That's the key, and the key is to trust ourselves. Really trust yourself in your practice, in your breath. As Dido would say, really trust yourself and give life to the Buddha. Give life to the Buddha. So, we're on a journey, and I'll be taking a journey. I leave tomorrow to New Zealand. So, we'll be having practice will continue, and we have some things for January, and I'll be back in, hard to believe, in a couple weeks. But hope that you come back and join and share with some of the people that will be coming to offer retreats. And the trust the mysterious part of this, that when you sit down, we have no idea what that is to turn inward and to really look at what's face, whatever's arising. And if we can do it here, that's what changes, is that, you know, this is not going to be a perfect world. These things I spoke about at the beginning that we all know of, that are happening, we'll be able to meet it. We'll be able to meet it and stay balanced and stay connected and feel what we're feeling and not get lost. So, bon voyage. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.